What's going on, everyone? And good morning. Today is Tuesday, October 1st. It is wild. It is October already. Red October is right around the corner. And this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And I hope you all woke up this morning feeling a little bit better than you probably did Monday morning after that Eagles game. It is, you know, I was going to say it's almost time to put it in the rearview mirror, but unfortunate timing with the bye week coming up. Something tells me we're going to be talking about this game quite a bit, probably up until halfway through next week when we start to turn our attention to the Cleveland Browns. But hopefully you guys all woke up today feeling a little bit better with it, maybe a little bit in the rearview mirror, not feeling the, pain and embarrassment of what that game was. 24-0. Yep, we don't have to rehash it. So let's get into what you might have missed on Monday. I rewatched the game, so I'll have some takes from, you know, watching it again, maybe some things we didn't talk about on the post-game pod. Nick Sirianni talked on Monday. We'll talk about stuff of what he had to say. And I have a Darius Slay and Isaiah Rodgers take that you guys are not going to like. So strap on in and let's do this daily Go Birds. All right, today on the schedule, you will hear from the coordinators, Kellen Moore, Vic Fangio, Michael Clay. The expectation is that they will talk today. No time yet, but I would keep an eye out for that. If you want to hear Vic explain why they played off coverage, if you want to hear Kellen Moore explain why they can't score any points in the first quarter, if you want to hear Michael Clay explain what in the world happened with Cooper DeJean and why Isaiah Rodgers did what he did, I would say, you know, maybe 1:30 is normally when they talk. So I'd keep an eye out for them, but we will hear from the coordinators today. So keep an eye out for tweets, and you know, we will recap what they have to say. If you don't want to follow them, if you want to ignore the Eagles world for another day, come on back in Wednesday morning, and I'll let you know everything they had to say of importance. So that is what is on the schedule today. Outside of that, they have the bye week this week. So the players will be away from the NovaCare. I'm sure some will stick around, work out, do work to keep preparing, but some players will get away and rest up. It's been a long 2 months, essentially, a month of training camp, a trip to Brazil, a trip to New Orleans, a trip to Tampa. So I think a week off will do this team some good, especially as they continue to recover some of the key players as well from concussions and various injuries. Speaking of injuries, the injury report. Nothing to report there either, because it doesn't appear the team suffered any major injuries in Sunday's game, which means heading into that game against the Browns, this team should go into it basically fully healthy. You would think Devontae, AJ, and Lane will be back. You would think Cam Jurgens and Jalen Carter, who had spasms, will be back. You would think Reed Blankenship, who was dealing with an illness during the game, will be back. So barring anything unfortunate happening during the bye week, they should be a fully healthy team heading into that game against the Cleveland Browns as they try to, as we all are, put that game against the Buccaneers behind them. So let's get into the news of the day. Nick Sirianni spoke with the media on Monday, and he was asked a bunch of different questions. He talked about turnovers. He talked about the defense. He talked about, what they're going to do during the bye week in terms of having meetings as a staff to dive into what they need to fix. And I will say Sirianni throughout his career has been pretty good at fixing big picture problems with the teams, you know, flags, the illegal pick play they struggled with. Like, I think he has been good when there's an obvious flaw of fixing them. Now, the issue with the team this year is the obvious flaw is not so obvious. They have trouble tackling, the turnovers. Like, there's lots of things for Nick to work on when it comes to this team. But let's get into a few of the things that Nick said of note. Nick was asked about his involvement with the defense now that he has, you know, a really experienced coordinator in Vic Fangio. And here is what Nick had to say.
Product that's on the field is a direct reflection of me. And I know Vic feels that way about the defense, but I still, as the head coach, yeah, I mean, if I feel like if something's on my mind and I'm going to tell Vic about it. Obviously you guys don't spend time around me on here, but I'm not real shy about telling people how I feel about different things. Cause at the end of the day, all I care about is us winning. And that would be malpractice on my part if I was feeling something about the defense. Jonathan Gannon, Vic Fangio, who you name the coordinator. I mean, if I didn't say anything about that, you know what I feel. So again, you have visions of things that how you see it in different scenarios. But, you know, we watched that tape together. We sat in there today, watched the entire tape together, went through all of it, talked about, you know, what the issue was for each, you know, each play that we failed on, what the answer, what the solution. We discussed, you know, different things, players, personnel, past experiences of what's worked against those different things. And so that's an organic conversation, and that's like, you know, like we talked about with the offense, that it's, you know, everybody's involved in that, not just Vic, not just me, not just Vic and I, but the entire defense.
So I understand that being head coach of the team, everything that goes on that field is on him. Everything. And he says that. He knows that everything that happens on the field ultimately goes to him. That is why there's a head coach win-loss record and not really a coordinator win-loss record. But I think we also all just need to be honest here. Nick Sirianni, not that involved in the defense. Just not, right? Like, he's not game planning the defense. He's not making changes during the game with the defense. Does he know what's going on? Does he chime in? Is, you know, give big picture thoughts? Yes. But much similar to the Kellen Moore play calling thing, we can't all offseason be like, yeah, that's Vic's defense. He's the head coach of the defense. He's the one making all the decisions. And then, like, pester Nick with questions about it. There's nothing he can say. Like, what was the game plan to tackle? Yeah, like, do you want him to get in there and explain the X's and O's? I think that, you know, Nick is not really involved in the defensive side of the ball. He's just not. Like, he's way more involved in the offensive side. And even then, Nick's main role on the team right now is CEO, head coach. You know, like, culture setting, team meetings, messages, like, correcting things in a big team meeting, like talking to players about what works best for them. That is his role. His role is not coming up with how to stop Tampa Bay's offense. It's not what he's paid to do. That's not what the Eagles want him to do. That's not what Vic Fangio wants. Like, Vic Fangio has 30 years of experience planning defenses. He doesn't need Nick. Now, doesn't mean Vic Fangio's done a good job. And, you know, it feels like, especially with him, it's a roller coaster. One week he's done a good job, the other week he hasn't. Didn't do a good job this week. And we'll get into a little bit more of that in a second. But in terms of you know, Vic Fangio and Nick Sirianni being involved in that, it's just not really something Nick's going to be able to explain. So he was asked about the defense, and we played what he said. And it's just, you know, he's not involved in the defense. So I don't know what else we want him to say. Now, he was asked about the tackling. I'll say this is something where you can definitely pin it on him a little bit more. Like, this comes down to how they're allocating practice time, how much time they're spending tackling, how they're practicing tackling. Obviously, Vic Fangio has a lot to do with that as well in terms of, you know, deciding, you know, how he wants to go about it. He's a defensive guy. But Nick does preach fundamentals. He does preach, like, things, you know, that are important to him. And being, like, a fundamentally sound team, technique, those are all important things to Nick Sirianni. So he was asked about the tackling, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I think fundamentals are tackling. On defense, they're tackling, they're block destruction, and how you get off blocks. You know, those are the main ones that are a defense fundamentals, how you cover, how you rush. You know, I really think, though, when I'm thinking true basic fundamentals, block destruction, right? Block destruction and tackling. On offense, I think about blocking, right? The combo blocks that the offensive line does together, right? And then ball security, same thing on defense, how you take the football away, how you catch the football, right? Those are the things that we talk about every single day, that we drill every single day, that's in team meetings every single day, of how we're doing in those different things. So it is an emphasis of ours that we want to be really good at. Now, this will be the week too that we kind of relook at some of the drills that we're doing. You try to do as many drills as you possibly can do, you know, that simulate tackling as much as you possibly can. Tackling is something that's difficult for the entire league to really simulate how you do that, because you're not doing the thing live. Well, that's the same thing with ball security. You're more susceptible to fumble the football as you're truly getting tackled. So all these fundamental, like, but it's a long season. And I think what you have to do is you have to put your guys in positions to simulate it while also protecting your guys to make sure that you have your guys every Sunday. And so I think what I'll do definitely this week is, okay, let's look at, all right, we know that the issue, what are the common themes of the tackles we're missing? And I got a pretty good idea what they are. How do we simulate that in drills? How do we show it in meetings, like from around the league, from us, so you emphasize it? And so that will be the process of what we go through this week. But with the amount of tackles we missed in this last game, right, it led to a lot of extra yards by them. And you're going to miss a couple tackles each game. But that wasn't to our standard. And there were different circumstances of why that we need to get corrected. And anytime I talk about, like, I'm so passionate about details and fundamentals that hurts me when we don't tackle well, because I know how much time we put into it. And so what I'm going to, again, first and foremost, going to say, what did I not do well enough? How do we, and that's what I'm, the things I'm talking about to you guys are the things that I didn't do well enough. And how do we correct that in a coaching standpoint to get better? And then the different things that we do fundamentally is going to be big.
So the tackling has not been good. And this is something that we discussed on the Go Birds pod when they signed Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is not a good tackler. He has struggled at tackling throughout his career. That does not mean there's not other great things he's good at. And it doesn't mean that he is misses all the tackles. He had two big tackles this season alone, one on Alvin Kamara, one on Bijan Robinson. But on the season, he is fourth in the NFL in missed tackles with 8. He is second among all the safeties. Reed Blankenship, 6 missed tackles on the season, so 2 fewer than Chauncey. N'Kobe Dean, he is 12th among linebackers, 5 missed tackles. Zach Bond, 3 missed tackles. Now, these are positions where you're going to see more missed tackles. They're got, you know, generally, if you're a linebacker, like, the tackle you're making is a running back that's already made it through the line. So those are tougher tackles. But yeah, tackling has been a problem for this team. It was a problem on Sunday against the Buccaneers. And it's something that they have to get better at. Like, so the defensive philosophy, or in terms of what we saw against the Buccaneers on Sunday, let's dive into that for a second. So there's been a lot of talk, and rightfully so, about the Buccaneers using quick game offense to move the ball against the Eagles. Now, the philosophy of Vic Fangio, and to a larger degree, Howie Roseman, when you think about who he's hired, right? Gannon, Desai, like, you don't even want to count Patricia, but the main coordinators he's hired have been guys that play off coverage. The corners play off the line of scrimmage. They're not playing press coverage. I saw a stat today, I apologize, I forget where I saw it, that the Eagles corners have played off coverage on 88% of the snaps this year. Like, they don't play press coverage. In fact, when we were looking at draft prospects, we talked about how Quinyon Mitchell was somebody that played off coverage a lot in Toledo. He did not play a lot of press man coverage. Cooper DeJean, a lot of off man coverage. He did not play, well, I guess not off man coverage, a lot of off coverage. He didn't play a lot of press man coverage. The Eagles are not a team that line their cornerbacks close to the receiver. They lined them 5-6 yards off. Now, what the Buccaneers did was, they threw the ball quickly. Baker Mayfield averaged 2.05 seconds to attempt in the pocket. No other quarterback in the NFL last week got rid of the ball quicker than 2.25 seconds. So Baker considerably faster at getting rid of the ball this past week than any other cornerback. And obviously, where you run into the trouble with that is if your corners are playing off and they can, and the receivers can just cut across the middle of the field, they're going to dink and dunk the ball down the field. Now, the philosophy of the Eagles, and I can't speak to Vic completely because I just don't know him well enough, but the philosophy of the team has generally been with this style of defense is that they're okay letting teams go 12, 13 plays down the field and hoping they'll make a mistake. Like, it's not crazy to think that if you make Baker go on 10, 11, 12 plays play drives throughout the game, he will turn one over. The problem with that is, you have to tackle. If you're going to play off coverage and you're going to count on teams to go 10, 11, 12 plays to get a touchdown, then you have to be a good tackling team. And the Eagles are struggling to tackle. If you play press man, if you blitz, if you do the things, you know, fans want the team to do, you're going to see, you know, 60, 70 yard plays. You're going to see 5, 6 play touchdown drives. But if you're not going to tackle well, then all you're really accomplishing is bleeding the clock, right, while they dink and dunk down the field. But also, you're not going to be able to get off the field because if the quarterback gets rid of it quickly, it is very easy to get 5, 6, 7 yards if you're playing off coverage. So they have to improve as a tackling team, like absolutely have to. And that is one of the issues with having Chauncey as your starting safety is he's just not a great tackler. Now, Nakobe, I think the verdict is still out a little bit on that. I'll give credit to Seth Joyner, obviously all-time Eagles, great linebacker, big player in the media scene talking about the Eagles. Like, he doesn't think Nakobe's a good tackler. And the 5 missed tackles, 12th among linebackers, I think he might have had 4 missed tackles against the Buccaneers, kind of backs that up. But they have to become a better tackling team. They just do. Nick also talked about the turnovers. Again, he was asked about it. I asked him about it. Jimmy Kemsky asked him about it. Like, he was asked about it a bunch of different ways. And here's what Nick had to say when talking about the turnovers.
I think as a football team, you know, I know that there's going to be a lot that's always brought onto the starting quarterback, and that obviously we understand that. But as a football team, I think it's just been consistency, right? Offensively, defensively, it's just been our consistency, and that's something I got to do as a head coach is make sure that, you know, our consistency is there. You know, we missed one tackle last week. We missed more, you know, 14 or whatever this week. And again, just the consistency of third down, consistency of red zone. You know, we haven't been great in the red zone. And then yesterday we were a little bit better there. And so again, it's just that consistency thing of the entire team. And myself, Jalen, offense, defense, special teams, it's all of us. As far as the turnovers, Elliot, that'll be something that that we really dive into on a bye week this week and spend a lot of time on that. Again, I've told you guys that it's not sustainable that, you know, we're -6. That's not a sustainable stat. You're going to be, I'm not sure you're 2-2 when you're -6 many times. Somehow we are. But we got to make sure that makes a big change, both taking the football away as a defense and protecting it as an offense. So that'd be something that, you know, when you go into your bye week, you study everything. You study the turnovers, you study negative plays, you study sacks, you study third down and all the different scenarios in there. You study 2-minute, you study 4-minute, you study, everything. Everything is on the table. You study anything that you deem yourself insufficient at as an offense and defense. You study everything you think that you're good at to try to, you know, make sure that you're finding your identity and doing what you do well. And so everything will be on the table that I'll have, you know, as far as with the turnovers again, that will be a big emphasis this week of what, why. I mean, we got an idea, obviously we got a good idea because, you know, it's only 4 games into it. But we'll be looking at it, you know, even more in depth with the what, the why, common threads amongst players, common threads amongst plays, play types, down and distances, situations, all that stuff.
So I got to give Nick credit. As somebody that talks sports for a living, as somebody who, when I believe something, like I want to prove it, right? Like if I think Nick Sirianni is a great coach, I'm going to make my argument as to why it is. Saying that turnovers are now a team stat is some all-time elite spin from really sports in general, but from a head coach. Like, there is just enough truth there where he's right. Like, if the offensive line is forcing Hurts to make quick or bad decisions, they hold part of that. If a receiver runs the wrong route and the ball goes right instead of left, then they hold a part of an interception. If, you know, all those things. But turnovers are just, they're a quarterback stat. Like, that's how they've been treated for the eternity of football. When Jalen wasn't turning it over, it was not the offense getting a ton of praise for how they were taking care of the ball. It was Jalen, right? Like, turnovers are a quarterback stat. And I appreciate that he is trying to defend Jalen. I appreciate that he is trying to divert the attention and blame away from Jalen. But turnovers are a quarterback stat. And the problem with the turnovers is Jalen. Jalen is not taking care of the football. So, Nick, you know, this is what he does. He is a head coach that will protect his players at the podium. But ultimately, Jalen Hurts is turning the ball over because Jalen Hurts is making bad decisions. The interceptions week one against the Packers, that was on Jalen. The interception week two against the Falcons, that was a bad decision. That was on Jalen. The interception week three against the Saints. Could Devontae have been better at the top of the route? Yes, I think that is a fair point. But Jalen is the one that threw it with Tyrann Mathieu sitting right there. Like, Jalen was the one that made that decision. The fumble against the Saints, that was on Jalen. The turnover against the Bucs. If you want to say that, you know, Saquon Barkley got beat with the Levante David blitzing, and so he holds part of the blame, sure, but Jalen is the one that makes all the money and has to be better when it comes to realizing pressure is there. I need to put two hands on the football. So I respect Nick's ability to divert this from Jalen, but it is on Jalen. It just is what it is. All right, one more thing I wanted to say before we get into a rewatch of the game, you know, which I'm sure will be just a lovely listen for everybody as we recap the team falling behind 24-0, is I want to talk about the criticism Darius Slay and Isaiah Rodgers have been getting. So I'm not talking about Isaiah Rodgers for what he did in the game, right? That was a play he shouldn't have made. I'm sure it's a play he wants it back. His answers explaining it weren't great. But they've both been under a ton of criticism recently in the past 24 hours for what they've been tweeting. So Darius Slay, for those that might have missed it, was getting a lot of criticism immediately after the game, probably during the game. But when he got back to his locker room, he probably got his phone out, checked Twitter. Probably not a great idea after that game. And he essentially tweeted out like his resume. Like, hey, if you're going to talk about the bad, let's talk about the good and everything he's accomplished. And he deleted it. And he's now made his account private. I understand that it's not the time or place for that. But ultimately, if we are going to talk about the athletes as fans and media members, they should be allowed to defend themselves. If people are going to call Darius Slay trash, this guy's no good, why is he on the team, get him out of here. Darius Slay, like he got called a loser all day yesterday. Darius Slay was a key member of a team that came within 3 points of winning the Super Bowl. Darius Slay was voted captain by his teammates. I know that his kind of funny attitude and he's always smiling and laughing, which is not a bad thing, but I understand that that can be viewed sometimes as him not being serious. And so when he does things, people love to lash out at it, right? Like the secondary actually played well in the Super Bowl, or there was something else he said that people got all worked up about. Darius Slay is somebody that's going to talk back. It just is what it is, right? And so why, as I often say with these things, if I was his friend, would I advise him to tweet? No, because it's not worth it. But I just don't think as a media and fan base, we can get mad at players for defending themselves. And that's essentially what he's doing. If the entire city and fan base is ripping him to shreds, I don't know why it's bad for him to come out and say, well, I've actually been really good. Like, defend yourself. Like, I'm sure he knows he could have been better yesterday. He has said those things. But to come out and defend yourself, I'm fine with it. And then Isaiah Rodgers tweets out basically saying, you know, look, people make mistakes at their job. He brings up, you know, people type the wrong key sometimes. Like, people make mistakes at their job. I'm fine with that, too. I am. Like, look, Isaiah Rodgers has to be better in that spot, much like when Jalen Hurts says he has to be better. It's good that he holds accountability, and I thought that in his press conference after the game on Sunday, he was very genuine in saying he had to be better. Ultimately, you can only say you have to be better so many times before it just rings hollow. But Isaiah Rodgers coming out and saying everyone makes mistakes at their jobs, I know it's not going to be perceived well, but it's true. Like, he's a human. He made a mistake. And so I think with Isaiah Rodgers and Darius Slay, it is not a battle worth fighting. But I think this idea that the fact that the players are tweeting, even Devin White, Levante David is probably a great friend of his. Levante David was on his team. This is all about public perception. It is not about Darius Slay being a loser. Isaiah Rodgers, you know, acting the way he is. Devin White not wanting to be on the team, which he might not want to be because they're not playing him. But if any of you have switched jobs or if any of you have done it, like, it's not wrong for Devin White to still feel connections to the teammates he played with in Tampa Bay. Doing it publicly is the problem, but it's only a problem because people are all mad about it. If we could all just look at this rationally and say, Devin White was excited that one of his friends is doing well. Like, that's essentially what happened. I know it's at the the, you know, not the benefit of his team. Like, I get that part. But I just don't think this means Devin White, like, wants Jalen Hurts to fail or that he wants the Eagles to fail. Like, Devin White's the one that made a group chat with AJ and Jalen. And for what it's worth, the Eagles are the ones screwing Devin White over by not playing him after they signed him and he banked his career on a one-year deal here. So I understand the frustration after a loss. And I understand that after a loss, people only want to hear specific things from players. But I don't think the way that Darius Slay, Isaiah Rodgers, and Devin White acted on Twitter is any indication that they're losers, that there's a culture problem, any of those things. I think people are just mad because they lost. And when the Eagles lose, players basically just have to be quiet. Otherwise, everything they say is taken out, is taken in the wrong way. So I know that's not going to be a popular opinion. I understand fans, you're mad. I get all that. But I don't think Darius Slay, Isaiah Rodgers, and Devin White are bad people. And I don't think they're losers. And I don't think it's a culture problem. It's just the Eagles lost, and so everything is frustrating right now. All right. On the other side, we are going to get into some of my takeaways from a second rewatch of the game, some things we didn't really talk about in our post-game pod or in the Monday Morning Daily pod. So we are going to get into that, but on the first, before we do, a word from our sponsors. Okay, so after that game on Sunday, which was not competitive, really, and is probably not one you want to relive, I did rewatch it multiple times. I rewatched it in the airport at Tampa before I got back to Philly, watched it a few times since I got home, and I wanted to talk about some of the more specific things I saw, maybe, you know, not Jalen related as much, not big picture, more some individual players we maybe didn't really get into. So first is, Fred Johnson really struggled. Like, props to Fred Johnson for coming in the week before against the Saints and playing well. He came in a tough spot with Lane going out, playing next to a guard that he really didn't get a lot of reps with and Tyler Steen, and he played well. Deserves credit for that. But with a full week to prepare, Tampa Bay really, really had success against Fred Johnson. Fred Johnson had 11 pressures allowed yesterday. It was the most of any offensive lineman in the league. I mean, 11 pressures is like a fourth or so of what Lane will give up in an entire season. In fact, he might not even go seasons where he gives up 25 pressures. Like, Fred Johnson really struggled with those 11 pressures. And it's not just the numbers. When you watch it, you could see he was pretty consistently getting pushed back into the pocket. There were lots of times Jalen Hurts had to move because of the pressure that was coming from Fred Johnson's side. I think Jalen dropped back 37 times against the Buccaneers. And so on roughly one out of every three or one out of every four, depending how you want to view it, times that Jalen viewed drop back, Fred Johnson allowed a pressure. So as much as we talk about them missing AJ and Devontae, I mean, it was really clear to see they really missed Lane Johnson against the Buccaneers. And getting him back against the Browns, which all indications are that he will play, is going to be really big for this offense. Fred really struggled in pass protection. Props to him for playing well against the Saints, but did not play as well against the Buccaneers with a full week of team being able to watch him and prepare for him. So we talked a little bit earlier about Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, but rewatching the game, I mean, yeah, the missed tackles were tough. Like, Chauncey did not play well against the Buccaneers. And then he allowed the touchdown, obviously, to Mike Evans. You rewatch that, clearly his fault there. And then you rewatch the drop touchdown that everyone's making fun of Slay for celebrating or like indicating no touchdown. To me, it looks like there's a mix up there. Maybe Chauncey's supposed to follow the guy Slay was with. Slay talks to Chauncey after the play and kind of, you know, does a little kind of like what happened there. But yeah, Chauncey, not a great game against the Buccaneers. I had a whole pod last week dedicated to how good he was against the Saints. Like, when Chauncey is on, Chauncey is a complete game changer, difference maker, where he really can impact a game. But when he struggles, just the nature of the way he plays, it really hurts the team. Another take on the defensive side of the ball, I thought Milton Williams was awesome. I know the defensive line as a whole didn't play well, so it's hard to sit here and act like, you know, it was some, you know, outstanding performance from anybody involved. But there was a play at the start of the game. I believe it was the second play of the game, maybe the first play, but it was the first running play for the Buccaneers. And Milton Williams is lined up on the left as the edge, and the ball gets ran to the right. And it's all the way, I think it ended up being a 17-yard gain. Milton Williams starts the play as the edge rusher that is furthest away from the side the ball is being ran to. He then makes the tackle on the complete opposite side of the field, about 17 yards down the field. That's impressive, especially early on. Like, in that heat, you're still adjusting. I thought it was a really good sign of effort from this team early on in the game. You know, obviously, they did not come out well. They did not look like they were prepared to play. But early on, I thought Milton Williams had that great play. And then there was another play he had where I think it was the play that ended in the Josh Sweat sack. I don't know if it was counted as a sack, but Josh Sweat tackled Baker right around the line of scrimmage. He might have got him a little behind the line of scrimmage. But Milton Williams wins the one-on-one against his guy, gets to the pocket, forces Baker to step up in the pocket, which allows Josh Sweat to go and get him. So Milton Williams, I think, has been good this year. He is certainly a bright spot. You look at how they've been able to use him in all different ways. He's now much more than just a pass rushing defensive tackle. He's in there on running downs. In fact, he's an important part of the running game in terms of going out there, lining up on the edge and setting the edge. But I also think as an edge rusher, he's shown some potential. Like, you know, he is not as fast as a lot of the great edge rushers, but he is better than you would think for a guy that is predominantly and was obviously drafted to be a defensive tackle. So definitely walked away impressed by Milton Williams. Saquon Barkley. So it was a real mixed bag watching him. And I don't mean because of his play. He was awesome. The long run that he had, the play where he caught the ball along the left sideline and trucked the guy over, you know, to get about 5-6 extra yards. He was unbelievable. But watching him be unbelievable in a game when the Eagles are down 24-0, or a game where, you know, there's just never really a real chance they're going to win it, I did kind of wonder if this is how Giants media and Giants fans felt. You know, where you're watching, you're going, man, Saquon was awesome. But, you know, they were down 24-0. Like, man, Saquon, what an unbelievable play. They got to get him the ball more. Except the quarterback turned it over a few times. Like, the Eagles are better than the Giants. I'm not saying it's completely apples to apples. But it is, you know, Saquon said it, you know, I'm paraphrasing a bit after the game, where it's the life of a running back that if you're down early, you're not going to get the ball. And I know we got into the details of why that happened. But Saquon being awesome will help this team for sure. It has helped this team against the Saints. You know, week one, he was awesome. But running backs are so dependent on other parts of the team being great, right? Like, if Jalen is playing as bad as he did against the Buccaneers, it kind of doesn't matter how well Saquon plays. Whereas if Jalen is playing super awesome, then, like, the Eagles are probably going to win the game. So it was cool watching Saquon be great, and it was cool watching him make the plays he did. But it was a bit of a like, wow, you know, the Eagles yesterday on offense looked like the Giants probably felt that the Giants fans felt their team looked most weeks, where Saquon's doing unbelievable things and you should get the ball to him more. But it just doesn't matter because the rest of the team is not playing well. Last kind of takeaway from rewatching, and obviously this is about Jalen. So, you know, we've talked about Jalen, but rewatching the game, man, he had some really bad throws in this game, and I think he would tell you that. Like, some throws where they just weren't even close. I can think of two shots down the field. He ended the game 0-3 from passes beyond 20 yards, and two of them that he threw were 5 yards ahead of his target. Like, I know he doesn't take a ton of snaps with John Ross. Like, obviously, John Ross is on the practice squad, but John Ross was here all offseason, and I think that at this point, you should have a good indication for John Ross's speed. And maybe in Jalen's head, he thinks John Ross is just faster, but he overthrew John Ross by about 5 yards on one play down the field. There was a play to Jahan Dotson early on in the game where Jahan Dotson, I thought, won at the line of scrimmage, was past his guy, and it would have been a bit of a tight window because the safety was over the top, but I thought there was a definite window there to get the ball to Jahan Dotson, and it seems like Jalen did too because he threw the ball that way, and it just sailed out of bounds, like 5 yards over Dotson's head, 3 yards, out of bounds. There was another play to Johnny Wilson where Johnny Wilson is crossing over the middle and the ball does hit Johnny Wilson in the hand. So it's a catch that, you know, you want your receiver to make in that spot. But Johnny Wilson is going across the middle and the ball is completely behind him. Maybe Johnny Wilson was supposed to stop there, but the ball was inaccurate to Johnny Wilson, which made it a tougher catch than it had to be. I'll also say that one thing we've talked about a lot on this pod, kind of wondering aloud, is why don't they run wide running back screens, or why don't they throw the ball to the running back more? There were a few plays. I think they tried to do it at least twice. There might have been a few more where they tried to get the ball to the running back behind the line of scrimmage to set up like a screen or a short dump off. And it would, I mean, Jalen just made bad throws. Like on one to Saquon, he was under center. He faked the handoff to Saquon, rolled out. Saquon kind of looped around and it was supposed to go to Saquon. Like the blockers are there setting the play up and it looked like it was pretty well set up. But Jalen just misses him. Like there is an edge in Hurts' face. But if that's the case, you either have to not throw it because you risk the ball being tapped up or intercepted like it was against Miami last year and he's had issues with that in the past. Or if you're going to make the throw, then you have to make the throw. But he just kind of lofted it over, went over the fingertips barely of the defender and over Saquon's hands, and that was incomplete. Later in the game, similar kind of play, not as set up as the Saquon one, but he tries to throw it to Kenny Gainwell in the flat and he just sails it. Like he just puts it, I think it was about three yards or so ahead of Gainwell. He stretches his whole arm out and couldn't get a fingertip on it. So I thought the accuracy for Jalen was bad. Now, outside of that, I will say like he didn't put the ball in harm's way a ton. Like I feel like we've watched a lot of these games. It's like that could have been intercepted. That could have been intercepted. I didn't think he had any throws. You know, there was the one that looked like it was intercepted, but it wasn't really. I didn't think that was like a super egregious throw. He did have one the play before that where I believe it was, I forget what edge rusher it was, but he tried to hit Calcaterra along the right sideline and the guy stretched his hands out and almost got it, but I don't think he was ever truly going to intercept that ball. But outside of that, for as much as he threw it yesterday, I did think he made better decisions in terms of taking care of the ball. The fumbling, obviously not good. I actually think the fumble after the fumble when they were down 14 later in the game where he fumbled it and it was recovered was actually more egregious than the fumble that was recovered by Tampa Bay. Yeah, I mean, he just didn't feel pressure in the pocket. Like, I believe it was Fred Johnson that was beat on that play. Jalen just doesn't feel the pressure coming whatsoever, and the ball just is completely knocked out of his hand. So Jalen has to be better at recognizing and feeling the pressure in the pocket. Yeah, accuracy an issue, feeling, you know, the pocket presence was an issue. They were decent against the blitz, nothing special, but I didn't think the blitz like wrecked their game plan or anything like that. But yeah, but still better decision making, but the accuracy had to be better. So that is maybe the last time we will ever talk about that Tampa Bay game. And by that, I mean, I'll be recording a pod with James later in the week where we will, I'm sure, talk about that Tampa Bay game, some more takeaways, Nick Sirianni, Jalen Hurts, and just all the latest with the Eagles. Look, I know it's the bye week, but we're not going anywhere. We got a lot of fun content planned for you this week. Some special guests, some of our favorites that we've had in the past are going to come on and talk Eagles. So as we always say to wrap up the pod, and as I wrap up the daily pod every single day, he's Elliot, I'm James. I'll talk to you guys later.